We had our very first Next Steps class last night, and we had a good attendance, and every single person that came joined the church last night, and almost all of them came back today. So I told Davy when I got home, I was like, they all turned, you know, they all joined last night. She said, they won't be back. She was kidding with me. Somebody just has to rein me in sometimes, and that's her. But all jokes aside, I think we had a great time last night. It was our very first Next Steps class. The Next Steps class is how you join River Springs Church now. It is, and if you haven't been through it, or you want to come through it, if you went through 101 years ago, we're gonna have more of these, and I'd love to have you come through and just refresh if you'd like. If you have not joined River Springs and you're interested in joining River Springs, let me know, because I would love to schedule another Next Steps class. As soon as I have some folks ready to go, we'll put another one on the calendar, because it was a fun time, and I enjoyed it, and I think either people are good liars or they enjoyed it too, so it could go either way. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. I am so excited to be starting a third month in this series. Anybody else excited with me? Anyone else having fun? Honestly, is this keeping you on track, reading it with me, reading it together, and knowing that I'm going to bust your chops if you haven't read? Because I know y'all are going to bust my chops if I get in here 1 week and I preach about, like, Abraham. So I have to, like, be ahead of the game with you. So, no, all jokes aside, I love this. I'm having a great time reading through the Bible, and I'm having an even better time reading through it with you. It makes it better. It makes it easier to know that I have you encouraging me, and that I'm not doing it by myself. I've tried to do it before by myself, and it has almost never worked. It is only through communication and joint accountability that we're able to do something big like this. And so I appreciate you sticking with it. I know a lot of y'all are reading. And I know, like I said last week, I know a lot of y'all maybe hit the surf last month sometime during Leviticus. But we're running again, and I hope you're running with us. You can get caught up if you haven't been running. We are just in the book of Numbers. We are just in Numbers, so we are not so far ahead that you can't catch up or you can't join in now, and I'll fill you in. We'd love to have you join us. We are reading through the Bible in 2018, and my only promise to you is that if you do this with us, if you read through the Bible in 2018, and you come in here and you listen to these messages as I bring them, I promise that you won't end this year the way you started it. There's three ways to join. You can join. There's paper copies of the reading plan back on the back. Like I said, we're in Numbers now. Pick up your paper copy on the way out, and you can get involved that way. You can also get involved with the Google Calendar. There is a link for that at the bottom of the webpage, riversprings.org. Down at the bottom, it says Bible Reading Plan. Just check on that, and you can see it right there. Or the third option is there's a chronological, it's called the Chronological Plan on YouVersion. You got an app right for your phone, or for your iPad, or whatever other device you use. You open that up and download that plan and read it with us. We're on, like, day 62 now, 63. Is that right? You're doing good if you know what number it is. Way to go. But I'd love for you to join us if you haven't already. It's good stuff, and I promise you won't regret having done it with us. But this is the ninth Sunday. This is the ninth message that I'm bringing on this, and the feedback that I've gotten so far is that it's not, like, cumbersome for you. You're enjoying it so far, so we're going to keep doing it because I like it, and I feel like people are liking it with me, so... I'm having a great time doing it. I'm excited about continuing on. I'm learning a lot, and I hope you are too. This week, we're in the book of Numbers. Then, as you may be able to tell, it is a book about numbers. And we won't, like, go through all the numbers, but there are a lot of numbers in the book of Numbers. I know, weird. And the first, like, 10 or so chapters is just full of numbers. Yeah, weird, huh? So let me just catch you up on where we are. Just a quick little catch up. So the book of Numbers is set right after the Exodus. Okay? You know about the Exodus. We talked about the Exodus. The people of Israel, under the leadership of Joseph, ended up in Egypt. They ended up in Egypt, and they, for a little while, had a good time, but the vast majority of it, not so good. It ended up just pretty doggone bad. They were forced into slavery. They were subjugated by the Egyptians. But there are two stories running parallel in the story of the Israelites in Egypt. And it's this. There's a story of slavery, but there's also a story of hope. The reason there's hope running parallel with the story of slavery is because all the way back in Genesis 15, God told Abraham that his people would live in a land that was good And to them, Egypt was looking no good. But the only thing was, and we read this also, is that it would not happen until after 400 years of subjugation in a land that was not their own. So the people had been holding on to hope, holding on to the promise. They believed that God would eventually deliver them. And eventually God does show up. He shows up in a huge way. Through a remarkable series of miracles that we talked about and we read about, God frees them. He provides for them. He gets them away. He leads them out of bondage. Clearly by his very hand, the people are set free. He gets them out of Egypt. The people have seen how bad life can be, but at the same time, they've seen how big God is and how much he can do. So the book of Numbers picks up as they are traveling. It picks up about 2 years after they have made it out of Egypt. Moses, the leader of God's people, has been given a job by God. It's a big job. It's a big job, but it's something that had to be done. And the job that he was given was that he had to count all the people, hence the numbers. So he counts all the people. He organizes them for the journey to the promised land, and he points them to the presence and the power of God on the way. First 10 chapters of Numbers are full of numbers as he counts the people. And it is kind of repetitive. He goes through and counts every tribe and every tribe and every tribe and every tribe. And we see that it's a whole lot of them. About 600,000 men. 600,000 men fighting men. Then that leads us to believe there's upwards of 1 million, maybe even 2 million people total. That's a lot of people to count, especially by hand. But it's a lot of people in general. And as he counts, he gives each tribe a responsibility, gives them a job. The tabernacle is set up right in the middle of the people, and it's done so to show them that God is gonna be there. God is in the midst of them. And as he is doing this, we see the evidence of it, right? Through the fire and the cloud, as he leads them, he shows them exactly when to come and exactly when to go. God's presence is manifest right there. And as God leads, the people follow. And that should be the story here. It should be the story of the people of Israel, that they have seen his mighty hand, he has led them, and they have followed. But it's not. That should be our story as well, that we have seen the mighty hand of God, and he has led us, and we have followed. But alas, sometimes it's just not. We all know how that song and dance goes, right? We forget. We forget. And they did. Numbers 11 comes along, 12, and the game suddenly changes. The people start to complain. And not just the people, the leaders. Like even the people right under Moses are complaining. Some of his top leaders, some of his top friends, Miriam and Aaron are even complaining. It's just getting kind of weird. And that's where we pick up today. Pick up there after the complaining, because Moses comes to God and he says, God, can we please get the show on the road? I can't keep these people together. I've pleaded with you. Now can we get the show on the road? So God listens and he says, let's get the show on the road. So in Numbers 13, the show is about to commence. And this is one of those pivotal passages, y'all. This is one of the most pivotal passages, not just in the book of Numbers, but in the entirety of the Israelite people, at least post-exile or post-bondage or post-exodus. We come into this chapter, we recognize that certain decisions are of pivotal significance in the life of the people of God. You and I will have moments like that, moments where the decision that we make, the next decision that we make, will have consequences for years and years and years for ourselves and for our descendants. There are times that this church will come to crossroads and we will have decisions to make. Do we go this way or do we go that way? Do we follow or do we not? Decisions that we will have to make that will resonate through generations. That's what's happening right here with the Israelites. They are at a crossroads. They have a decision to make. Will they follow or will they not? And the decision they make will play out for generations to come. they're left with a decision and it resonates. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, you probably already know, they make a bad decision. They make the wrong decision. And it follows them. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So open your Bible, Numbers 13. We're going to read that story together. If you don't have your Bible, open up your phone or your iPad or your Kindle Fire, whatever you got, your tablet. Open up your device and turn your Bible on. Look up here. I think they'll be up here. They're definitely on the fill-ins. We're going to read some Numbers 13 together. Starting in verse 1. You with me? All right. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel." So see, what has happened is they are there. They are at the edge of the thing that God has promised to them. So God says, send out some spies. Send out some men to go check it out. So that's where we are. "From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one a chief among them. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the people of Israel. And these were the names: from the tribe of Reuben, Shammua, the son of Zachar; from the tribe of Simeon, Shaphat, the son of Hori; from the tribe of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh; from the tribe of Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph; from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, son of Nun; from the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Rephu; from the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodi; from the tribe of Joseph, that is, from the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Susi; from the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali; from the tribe of Asher, Sether, the son of Michael; from the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, the son of Vashi, I don't know, I got nothing on that one; from the tribe of Gad, Guel, the son of Malchi. These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. So let me just stop for a second and say, if you struggle with names in the Bible, you ain't the only one. But if you are great with child right now, I got some really cool names I could give you for a child. I mean, we could name your kid Naphtali, or we could name your kid Ephraim. Those are regular names. Or we could go to like Gimali. You like that one? Anyway, never mind. But imagine the honor, right? We said earlier there was like 2 million of them by now. And they have this moment where each tribe has to call out one spy, one special set-aside spy to go do the work of God. And so they gather together, and Moses calls out these 12 dudes out of 2 million. Imagine. Imagine the honor. Imagine the excitement. That's me. Like, have you ever, like, tried out for a team, like you and like 15 or 16 other doofuses? You try out for a team and like 12 of you make it, and you like look at the list and you're like, I made it, 12 out of 16, yay. And those other four are like, man, you suck. But no, they don't say that. They say, I wish I'd have made the team. But this is 12 out of 2 million, right? This is a huge deal. Like, I made the cut. Cool, right? These guys made the cut, and they had a lot of people cheering for them. They were excited. They were ready to go home. They were ready to go to the land that God had promised them. So these 12 dudes go and do the deal. They go and spy out the land. So let's continue here. Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up into the Negev and go into the hill country and see what the land is and whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many, whether the land that they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities that they dwell in are in camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, whether there are trees in it or not. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. Moses says, go and bring us back a report. God has called them to spy on the land, and so Moses charges them with actually doing the job of spying. Like, this is a full-fledged reconnoiter mission that's going on here, right? Like, he wants to know everything. He wants to know, is there trees? He wants to know, are there walls? He wants to know, are they in cities? He wants to know, is the land any good? Like, tell us everything. Go and take notes. Go and tell us what the land is like. And so that's what they did. They went into the land and they spied on everything. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob near Lebohamath, and went into the Negev and came to Hebron, Ahiman and Shashi and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there. Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And they came to the valley of Eshcol and cut down from there a branch with a single cluster of grapes. And they carried it on a pole between two of them. And they brought some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster that the people of Israel cut down from there. That sounds pretty good, right? I mean, imagine. They cut one cluster of grapes and it took two dudes to tote it. A lot of grapes. A lot of grapes. I don't even know how to eat a pomegranate, but it sounds delicious. I mean, it's stuff they hadn't seen before, stuff they weren't familiar with. This was what they had been wanting. This was what they had been dreaming of. At the end of 40 days, they returned from spying out the land. And they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit." Have you seen the not the newest Star Wars, but the Star Wars reboot, the one that came out a couple of years ago? And it rebooted and they reintroduced Han Solo. And is anybody with me? You might know the one. And so they reintroduced Han Solo, and they're on the, as Judah calls it, the Millennium Falcon. And they're on the Millennium Falcon. I know it's not Millennium, it's Millennium. They're on the ship and they're talking about it. And Rey asks about the Force. And Han says this line that I love, I repeat it all the time. He says, "It's true, all of it." You remember that? Y'all remember that line? "It's true, all of it." That is what these guys say. They get back, they come back to where they had been sent from, and they look at Moses and say, "It's true, all of it. The land, it flows with milk and honey. The grapes are as big as your eyeballs. The pomegranate's as big as my head. It's all true. Everything God said it was going to be, it is. It is so great. It is so great. It's all true." Cool, right? But, verse 28, "However, the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified, and they're very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negev. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan." So here's the report. The report is there are other people there already. Duh. I mean, if the land's so good, of course there's people there already, right? The report is this. This is going to be tough. This is going to be difficult. We got our work cut out for us. But it's not a universal report. There is a minority report. Verse 30, "But Caleb quieted the people before Moses, and he said, 'Let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it.'" Caleb says, "We have to do this, y'all. We have to do this. We're strong enough. We're big enough. We can do this. God has called us to do this. We have to try." We see in chapter 14 that we won't get to today that he is joined by one other spy, Joshua. He agreed with him. But they are outnumbered. The minority report is just that. It's only two of them. Then the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are." So they brought the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people that we saw there are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come from the Nephilim. And we seemed ourselves like grasshoppers. And so we seemed to them." Friends, the negative outweighed the positive for the 10 of them. It was just too scary. They were convinced they could not do it. I'm going to tell you right now, before I tell you anything else, the devil is a master at making things look worse than they really are. He plays on our fears. He plays on our dread. He plays on our sense of weakness. And if we focus on those things, if we focus on the negative, we will lose our peace and we will lose our victory. I mean, think of all the things we've been terrified of over the years that came to literally nothing. I mean, if we just went around here and started thinking about some of the scares that you've seen about on CNN or whatever your news network of choice is, we could probably come up with a whole bunch of them. Like, take for instance the nuclear threat of the 70s with the Russians. We ended up being really afraid of nothing. They probably couldn't have even got a nuke here if they'd had to. We had no idea. Or think about more contemporary. Think about like the Y2K scares. Everybody remember the world was going to end? Or since then, I mean, think about the swine flu scare. Or like two summers ago, the scare was Ebola. Like, are we going to get Ebola? Like, there's always a new scare, right? There's always something for us to be terrified of. That is not by accident, friend. That is your enemy playing on the fears of this world. I'm talking to somebody specific right now, and I don't know who it is, but here it is. You've been listening to the majority report. You've been listening to the 10. You've been listening to what your circumstances are saying. You've been listening to what your feelings are saying. You've been listening to what the enemy is saying. You've been listening to what your friend has been saying to you, and you've stopped listening to God. You've stopped hearing the promise of God. I don't know. God just told me to say that. Somebody is listening to the 10 instead of the 2 today. Stop. Stop. Because that's what's happening here. They started listening to the 10 and not the 2. Friends, God never promised it was going to be easy. God never promised that they were going to waltz right in and people were going to lay down their arms and bang them into plowshares. And that they were just going to willy-nilly have the land. He did not make that promise. Remember, he made that kind of that promise back to Moses. And Moses said, "We ain't interested in that if you ain't coming." Remember? We talked about that a few weeks ago. So God didn't promise them it was going to be easy. He didn't promise them that it was going to cost them nothing. He didn't promise them that they were going to lose nothing. What he promised them was, "This is your land. This is your promise, and I will deliver it into your hand." That was the promise. They took their eyes off of the promise. The spies were to give a realistic assessment when they came back. But it wasn't an assessment that was to be taken merely based on the empirical data that comes back from having seen the land. They should have brought back a report, and then the report should have been weighed in such a way that the empirical data, in terms of the size of the towns, the fortification, the size and number of the people, all of that stuff could have been viewed through a lens of faith. That's the way they should have looked at the majority report, through a lens of faith. And what I mean is this, that they were supposed to look forward, and they should have been looking forward, but they also should have been looking back and remembering who got them to the point at which they were standing. They didn't get there on their own, did they? God brought them to exactly where they are. And instead of remembering who had sent them, what did they do? They stopped remembering. The spies, even as they realistically assessed the challenge that was before them, that was before Israel, they made a huge mistake. They forgot four things that if we look at this text, it reminds us. Moses, as he writes it, reminds us of these four things that are very clear. The first thing they forgot was God's promises. They forgot God's promises. They forgot God's promises. The first 16 verses of the story, they remind us again and again of the promises of God. And my friends, in every circumstances of life, as believers, we are to remember God's promises. We are to remember God's faithfulness. We are to remember God's power. He reminds us of God's promise in these verses. Notice the very first words that the Lord speaks to Moses in appointing the spies. In verse 1, he speaks to Moses and he says, well, it's verse 2, what does he say? Send men to the land, what? Land what? Land what? That I have given you. I have already given it to you. I have given you this land. Does he say, is there a question mark there anywhere? Does he say, the land that I might give to you? The land that I may give to the sons of Israel? The land that is potentially possible if you can go and win it? That you can have? I mean, to the victors go the spoils. Does it say any of that? No, it says, I am giving to the people of Israel. I'm giving you this land. He says to Moses, this land belongs to you. Why? Because you want it? No, because I'm giving it. I'm giving it to you. And the spies are sent up to the land, and in their minds, no matter what they see, they should ring these words, I am standing in the land that God is about to give to us. Everything that they see, no matter how scary it is, should have been viewed through the lens of God's promise to them. And what should they do about it? They should act on the promise. We're called to do that, y'all. We're called to act on God's promises. Not to act on God's promise is to not believe God's word. Friend, not to act on God's promises is unbelief. You and I, we can throw rocks at how silly they look if we want to, but that's hypocrisy because it ain't just them, is it? We do this. Friends, God's promises are true, and yet very often we see the obstacle. We focus on the obstacle, and the obstacle looks too big. The obstacle looks even bigger than God and His promises. And when we approach those obstacles and circumstances and challenges and situations of our lives as if they are bigger than God and His promises, friends, we are doing exactly what the children of Israel are doing here. Forgetting God. Forgetting His promise. And that's the one thing that happened here. The spies, having been appointed by the word of the Lord to Moses to go into the land which God had already promised to them, they forgot the promise. And it only shows up in the assessment of Caleb and Joshua who supported him. And their counsel, friends, it was devastating. It was devastating. It was sincere, but it was sincerely wrong. Why was it wrong? Because it failed to factor God into the equation. Their assessment fails to factor God in. Friends, they forgot to act on God's promises. The second thing they forgot was God's faithfulness. They forgot God's faithfulness. They forgot God's faithfulness. And if we focus on verses 17 through 22, we can see that God's faithfulness is referred to very clearly. It points simply to this, in every circumstance of life, we can count on His faithfulness. It's not just that He has promised stuff to us. It's that if we look back, we can see that He has already delivered. He has been making promises. He has been delivering already. It's not like we're waiting on the big payoff from God. He's already given us so much more than we have ever asked for or deserve. And he did that with these folks as well. And you say, well, I'm looking at 17 through 22 right now. I see it right here on the fill-ins. And I don't see what that has to do with the faithfulness of God. That doesn't make sense. Well, let me tell you. Where do they go first? Starts with the letter N, the Negev. That's up to the hill country of Hebron. Let me tell you about Hebron. Does anybody know what's at Hebron? Well, I know you know. You lived there for... Does anybody else, anybody that's never lived in Israel know what's in Hebron? Anybody? That's where Abraham and Sarah are buried. Abraham and Sarah, whom 400 years earlier, God had said, I'm going to make you the father of nations. I'm going to make your descendants like the sand on the seashore, like the stars in the sky, and I'm going to give this land to you. Half that promise has already been fulfilled, right? The very fact that 12 leaders that were representatives of 12 massive tribes of what we believe to be close to 2 million people should speak to the remarkable nature of God's faithfulness to Abraham and this promise. Remember, it was a family of like 70 that went down to Egypt. 70 go down, and how many come back? Couple mil. God has already been faithful. He's already fulfilled half of this promise. And then he brought them right back to the place where the promise was made, and they forgot. They forgot God's faithfulness because what was in front of them was hard. Do you ever do that? I was thinking this week, I was writing this, and I was thinking about God's faithfulness to me over the years, and I was just recalling how often God had been faithful in the midst of struggle, in the midst of hard times, not sparing me from the hard times, but being faithful in and through them. He was faithful to me, and if I had an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, I could share a bunch with you, and we could talk about it, and you could tell me how God had been there even when no one else was for you, I'm sure. But here's one thing that I can testify to, and I know you can, is that God has never left. God has never forsaken me. I have never woke up and found myself alone. I know God has been there. And the children of Israel, instead of looking at this fact, this thing, where they were, and saying, you know, this is not going to be easy, but look how faithful God has already been. Instead of doing that, they look at the obstacle. They look at the obstacle. And anybody that runs the hurdles will tell you the moment you start staring at the hurdle is the moment the trouble starts brewing. They forgot God's faithfulness. Friends, don't focus on the obstacle. Focus on what's on the other side. Focus on God's faithfulness. And third, they forgot God's generosity. They forgot God's generosity. Verses 23 through 27 point us directly to God's generosity. When the report comes back, God had told the children of Israel he was going to give them what? A land flowing with milk and honey, right? And then the report comes back, and what's the report say? Remember Han Solo? It's true. All of it's true. The report was that God did exactly what he said he was going to do. You can put duh out in your notes to the side. Where did all that milk and honey come from? Where do you think it came from? Just fell out of the sky? Just happened to be there? Let me stop. I don't think that literally means milk and honey is flowing in the rivers. Think that there's, you know, rich land for cattle and possibility of flowers and plants and bees and honey. I mean, we see the fruit that's already growing. Who provided all that stuff? Do you think it was the Canaanites and the Amalekites and the Hittites? No, they didn't make that stuff. God provided it. God did it. That stuff's not just there. It came from God. So friends, when you come to an obstacle, when you come to trouble, what you need to do is stop and remember that God has been faithful, he has been generous, and he is good. When Moses shows us the blessings of God's generosity in the land that he was about to give to the people of Israel, what the people ought to do, what they should have done, was fell down on their knees and ascribe to God the blessings that he is worthy of. Friends, God had delivered that. He put it right there in front of them, and they didn't even think to say thank you. What they thought to say was, oh, daggum, it's going to be hard. We better go somewhere else. They didn't think about God's generosity, and because of that, unbelief crept in. And friends, it'll do that for us as well. When we stop remembering how generous God is, we begin to be filled with unbelief. We begin to doubt where our blessings come from. That happened to them. And the fourth thing they doubt was God's power. They forgot God's power. Moses points us directly to God's power. The majority of the spies report that there are big people in the land, that they are like grasshoppers in comparison to the big people in the land. Now, I have no idea what that means. I have no idea if they are, in fact, giants or if they're just taller than your average Israelite. I don't know. But I believe that this is likely true, that they did feel intimidated by the size of these men. I believe that they did look around and say, we probably can't do this. I believe that that is true. I don't think that God's purpose in sending the spies into the land was for them to come back and say, all right, we got this, piece of cake, let's do it. That was not the point. The point was for them to go in and have the response, this is way too big for us. That was the point, them to go in and say, this is too big for us, but it's just the right size for our God. That was the point, friend. That was the point. God can do it. He's sovereign. He's going to display his remarkable power. And not because this is a job that we can handle. No, but because this is a job that's way too big for us. It's a job that I could never do, that you could never do, that we cannot do. We know that his promise and his power will prevail, not because of us, but because of him. Friends, this was an opportunity for God to display his glory, for God to display his grandeur, for God to display his power. This was not going to be about the Israelites and their everlasting renown. This was not going to be about some crowning victory for the Israelite army. No, this was going to be about the display of God's power. It was too big for them. It was supposed to be too big for them. I don't know if you're like me, but certain things in life, when I enjoy a little bit of success, I get tempted to think, I got this. I can do this. I'm good at this, man. This is my thing. It usually takes me about 13 seconds to be reminded of how fallible and broken and jacked up I am. I'm reminded time and again that I cannot do it, that it is too big for me. Friends, the message of the Bible is not you can do this. The message of the gospel is not try harder, you can do it. The message is this: you can do all things through him who brings the strength. The message is that what is impossible with men is not just possible, but is accomplished with God. The message is this: the message is Christ and the gospel will accomplish what you and I will never accomplish. The message is that God is sovereign. The message is that God will have the last word. God will have the glory. Of course, the problem is that we live in a world where even in church, man, the creature is big and God, the creator, is small. But that's a lie. God is so much bigger. He's so much greater. He's so much more grand. That was the problem with the majority of the spies. For them, their report magnified the problems and minimized the power of God. They magnified the problem and minimized the power of God when they should have been doing the other thing, embracing and magnifying the power of God and remembering he was bigger than whatever problem faced them. And I can only imagine the horror of Caleb as he says, no, we got this. And the other 10 are like, no, we don't. And they listen to the 10. I mean, I can't imagine being the one with the right answer and the one with the faith and saying, please, guys, God, he's going to give us this. And having the other one say, we're afraid. Somehow, in the midst of all the obstacles, Caleb and Joshua as well were able to fix their eyes on God. Imagine how that must have felt. Israel was the promised land. They were at the promised land. And though they had to overcome obstacles to take possession of it, it was good. Their spies had even brought back fruit, proving how good it was, showing it was worth their effort, worth their trust, but they just didn't do it. They failed to enter the promised land. Instead, they fought long, extended, draining wars. We see in chapter 14 that God says, if you don't want to come, you ain't got to come. And he lets none of them come into the land. None of them, except for Caleb and Joshua. Friends, they trusted their fear rather than their father. And that's the story here. Friends, don't let it be your story. Don't trust fear. Trust the Father. Don't say, I know God can heal, but. Don't say, I know God can deliver, but. Don't say, I know God can save, but. Don't say, I know God can open the door, but. Don't say, I know God can bring water from a rock, and he can provide food, and he can bring bread and meat from nothing, but. Don't say that I know God can, but. How many times have we stood on the border of our own promised land and failed to take possession just because we couldn't believe God was able, just because we believed that the obstacle was bigger than God? How many of us need that reminder today? Friend, your God is so much bigger than the obstacle that you're magnifying right now. He's so much bigger than the thing you're focusing on in your life right now. He's bigger. Friend, he's bigger than the failure in your rear view. God is bigger. Let me tell you a story. At age 7, Woodrow Wilson had to go to work to help support his family. At 9, his mother died. He didn't learn to read till he was 10. At 22, he lost his job as a store clerk. At 23, he went into debt and became a partner in a small store. At 26, his partner died and left him a huge debt. At the age of 35, he had been defeated twice while running for a seat in Congress. At the age of 37, he finally won that seat. At the age of 39, he lost his reelection bid for that seat. At the age of 41, his 4-year-old son died. At the age of 42, he was rejected for a land officer role. At the age of 45, he ran for Senate and lost again. At 47, he was defeated in his quest for nomination for vice president. At 49, he ran for Senate again, lost again. Then at age 51, he was elected president of the United States. What failure, what hardship, what obstacle are you focusing on today? What obstacle are you magnifying? What thing is in your path that you are magnifying? What limit are you listening to, friend? Is it something like this? I'm too old, or I'm too young, or I have my family to think about, or I have too much invested in this job, or this house, or this whatever. That idea is too crazy. I could never do that. It's never been done before. I couldn't do that. What if I fail? What if I fail again? The list goes on and on. But what would your life look like if you could see what God wants you to see? Instead of focusing on obstacles and failures and problems, if you could focus on what God had for you, the promised land that God has put before you, how would that change things? Friends, I believe that you and I are like the Israelites in this story. We live in a land, in an area, in a place that is worth taking for the glory of God. It's not flowing with milk and honey, but this is a land that God has promised to us, and it is a land that is worth taking. In 1858, there was a scientific expedition that passed through a particularly harsh area in the American West. A young lieutenant by the name of Eves made this entry into his report. He said this: the region we explore today is completely valueless. It can be approached only from the south, and after entering it, there is nothing to do but turn around and leave. Ours has been the first, and doubtless will be the last to visit this profitless locality. It seems intended that the Colorado River will forever remain unvisited and undisturbed. The area he's referencing here, you might want to take a stab? The Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon. Obviously, they looked and did not appreciate the value of what God had put before them. Rather than being the last people to ever visit it, they were among the first of millions and millions and millions. Because they had no vision. Are we the same way? We focus on the obstacle and not the vision, not what God has planned. Friends, don't do that. Don't focus on the obstacle. Don't focus on the failure. Focus on the promise. God has given us all we need to take the land he's provided for us. The key is, how will we respond to the news? Will we be willing to face our fears and move ahead no matter what? Or will we shrink back and listen to the majority? So here's my challenge to you today. Simple challenge, one challenge. Believe the minority report. Believe the minority report. God is calling you to say yes to something today. He's calling you to be faithful to something today. He's calling you to something today. Maybe it's to salvation. Maybe he's calling you into his family today. Maybe he's calling you to say yes to him. Or maybe he's calling you to tell your story, to share your story about how he called you into his family. Or maybe he's calling you to a ministry. Or maybe he's calling you to start a ministry. Or maybe he's calling you to missions. Maybe he's calling you to go. I don't know what God's calling you to, but I do know this. He has set before you a promised land. He has something for you. He has your name written on something, and you cannot focus on the obstacle. You cannot focus on a possibility of failure or failure again. You must focus on God. Pray with me. Almighty God, we come to you today, and we just thank you for the